Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Integral Living Room Community Call. It's Thursday, May 26, 2016. I'm Jeff Salzman, coming to you from a cozy, rainy evening here in Boulder, Colorado. And I am happy to be here tonight with you, and thank you for joining us for the second of four community calls that we are doing in preparation for the upcoming Integral Living Room event that we are doing here in Boulder at the Integral Center in November, the 10th through 13th of November. And the topic of this year's Integral Living Room is a cheery one. It's one that is very important to each of us, certainly ultimately very important to each of us. And that is the topic of death and dying and grief and loss. And we're going to see if an integral lens can't help us to navigate that and really, you know, embrace what is inevitable so that we can have a fruitful time at it. So the call tonight will go on for an hour and 15 minutes. It'll end at a quarter after the next hour, wherever you are in the world. And I would like to now welcome and have join us my comrades for the Integral Living Room and for a long time Integral Endeavor together. First, Diane Musho Hamilton. Hey, Di, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on the call. I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah, also in the Rocky Mountains with a spring thunderstorm and really beautiful weather, and I'm happy to be on the call. Thank you.
Yeah, cool. And Terry Patton, how are you tonight?
I'm terrific. I'm a little ways away from home. I'm in Napa, California, instead of Fairfax, and it's a bright, sunny day here, and I'm excited to be here with everybody. Thanks for welcoming me, Jeff.
Yeah.
I think it'd be good to go into what we're specifically intending to focus on in this particular call, which is not just death and dying as a general principle, but the little ways, and they're not always so little, but you might say the encounters we have with death and dying in the midst of living, which has to do with loss and the death of loved ones and partings and loss, health problems, all the different ways in which we are forced to let go and go through a process of grief of one kind or another. Usually these conversations about grieving are framed by the famous stages of grieving that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross put forward, that we usually begin with denial and then anger and then bargaining and then depression and finally acceptance. But we want to go into this a little more richly with integral perspectives this time. Now there's, in a way, in a broad sense, two broad ways of looking at this kind of loss. One of them has to do with really waking up to that which is never lost, to transcending the identities that are always going to go through the cycles of life, the wheels of dawn leads to noon and the zenith of the sun, but it leads to sunset and ultimately to the dark of night. After spring and summer, there's fall and there's winter. There's always this cycle of life. And therefore, being awake to something that is beyond the cycle is the whole point. That's more or less the transcendental perspective. And then there's the more immanent perspective, where we really pay attention to everything that we can learn from the process of the dying of the life, of the losses, of the diminishment, of grief, and how we've deepened and our character is built by it, and how the vast, unexplored territory of grief can bring us into wisdom and a bigger dimension of our existential estate. Thinking of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, there's a wonderful quote from her. She says, "The reality is that you will grieve forever. You will not get over the loss of a loved one. You will learn instead to live with it. You will heal and you will rebuild yourself around the loss you have suffered, You will be whole again, but you will never be the same, nor should you be the same, nor would you want to. And so we wanted to talk about this, and it's I think that each of us, Jeff, Diane, and myself, has had some, oh, you might say some wry laughter about having chosen this topic. For me, it's been especially poignant because one of my dearest friends, who had been a miraculous cancer survivor, her cancer slipped away, and she died literally less than 2 weeks after discovering that it had come back, just very suddenly. She was one of my dearest friends in this life, and it was really a heartbreak and really put me in a poignant, very immediate sense of connection to all this. And then less than a week later, a fellow who had been a good friend, we had lived together in a community household as a part of a spiritual community back in the 80s. He'd been a very healthy guy, wasn't overweight, he exercised regularly, but he suddenly had a stroke. And he was dead that same day. So this process of death has been coming close to me. It's softening me up. It made me feel appreciative, particularly of this imminent perspective where we value the loss and don't just transcend the dimensions on which we... So we thought it might be good to begin the call by each of us doing what I've just done and talking personally about our relationship to this matter of grief and loss. Diane, would you like to... speak up about that?
I think I'll hand it to Jeff for that one.
Yeah, fair enough. I'll take a stab at it. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Di. I haven't had a lot of experience with it, I realize. And I'm 62 years old. My parents are gone and grandparents, and you know, that's all right according to schedule, and I grieved and they simultaneously feel like absences in my life and also presences in my life, every one of them. And Terry, you talked about the imminent and transcendent dimensions of this. And I actually feel like I, having done, you know, a lot of spiritual practice and meditation over the years, I have a pretty good connection with the part of me that's not going to die, I think. If I'm not mistaken, that feeling of just pure awareness is, you know, I'm pretty good with that. But I realize I'm really quite a novice in the rest of it, in the sort of the imminent part. And I'm afraid. I mean, I don't want to die. I like being Jeff. I like my body. I like Jeff. I like my friends. I like life. I like the mornings and the evenings and shopping and traveling and being with friends and making love and eating. And I want to see what Apple comes out with next. And I want a self-driving car. And, you know, I mean, I'm into it. And so I want to, I'm 62, you know, I'm actually looking in the mirror and I'm seeing that it's, you know, not going up anymore. It's going down here. And so I do want to, you know, turn and face it more. And I think even just what we've done so far with Ken, I mean, the conversations we've had with Ken about this and the conversations with each other, and of course that's what the Integral Living Room is all about, is just having conversations. You know, we do sort of fancy ones sometimes, but the basic idea is we just talk about these things and share and see each other and be seen, and that itself is, you know, spiritual work. So I'm excited about doing that. It has been fruitful so far. I feel like I really am able to invite my own death, my personal death, into my present moment now in a way that I hadn't before. And that already feels like progress. I feel like a slightly bigger person having done that a bit. So I'm eager to continue. And so I think that's enough for now. And Di, anything up for you in this moment?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. For me, everyone, I'm in a different position than Jeff in the sense that I think my spiritual path really began with the death of seven of my good friends when I was 17. Some of you know I had four friends who died in a light plane, and one who was killed in a knife fight, believe it or not, one who died in an automobile, and one who committed suicide. And so I went from having very little exposure to the dying process to going to one funeral after another, as I was in that rite of passage and to becoming an adult. So I think my entire adulthood was shaped by my relationship to death. And then throughout the rest of my life, I've lost people relatively consistently all along the way. And in the last couple of years, my father died. My first student, some of you on the call may know him, James Bay, who was a very good friend, died. He was a young man, too, 40 years old. And then another very good friend of mine died in San Francisco in a freak, her young 1-year-old baby. Some of you may know this story, and she was hit lying under a tree in a park in San Francisco via one of the maintenance trucks. So for me, this morning I woke up, really considering also my father's passing and just how brutal it was. My dad had a tumor in his mouth, which spread to his jaw and eventually created bone cancer. But during the course of that, which I understand to be one of the most painful cancers when it's in the bone, and also they radiated his mouth, which is, if anybody here is and familiar with someone who's had radiation on their tongue or in their throat, it's devastating mouth. So my father had a very brutal passing. And for whatever reason, probably because we're doing the call, I woke up this morning, contemplating not only the loss, but also the suffering that, we're in relationship to in the way of physical suffering, in the way of the suffering of people. Let's say in my friend Christy's case, her husband and her child losing his wife in such a freak accident. So I feel very humbled by it all. I've been a practitioner really since this happened to me when I was 17 years old. And so there's this state of my own impermanence. At the same time, I feel like I just take in deeper and deeper every day the very impersonal and often emotionally devastating part of this experience, that most of us on the call are really quite devastated by the state of the planet and the kind of loss that's gone on just in terms of habitat and species and what a heartbreak that is. So I feel humbled and poignant in this moment, and I also I'm also interested in the conversation and connecting to that part of me that seems to also know how to go through these processes. I was amazed the day after my dad died that I was in as good a shape as I was. So it's a very provocative topic. So I guess it might be nice, Terry, what do you think? Maybe we could call on a few people and find out why they're on the call. Maybe just hear a few different people before we hear from Ken. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Please press 1 on your keypad to raise your hand if there's anything you'd like to share. Maybe we can have a few people come on and speak for, just briefly, maybe 30 seconds or so, and help us kind of seed the field. Let's see. Jane, thank you for raising your hand. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. This is Jane Hughes, you in New York. My relationship with death has been very prominent in my life for the last 25 years or so. I've written 2 books. One is a collection of folk tales from around the world and throughout time about death and dying. And another one is a paperback of anecdotal experiences of people going through death or dying for themselves or for others. And I've been working. I also host death cafes every month. I've been doing that for several. These are conversations, as you may know, about death. People come, not just the people who are dying, from their 20s on up. And the point being that the more we can really bring death into our life and have it understand that it is part of our life, it's our birthright, I think the happier and the freer people are. I notice that in the death cafes. They go away feeling so much lighter. It's palpable. Hmm. And so death is very much part of my life, and I'm very grateful for that. It wasn't my idea. It came through source, but that's why I'm on this call, because I want to hear what everybody else has to say.
Well, great.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Jane.
Yeah, fabulous.
Yeah, really. Ah, Christine, hi, welcome.
Hello, and thank you for taking my number one hand raised. I'm Christine Doan. I'm ringing in from far north Queensland, Australia, and quite frankly, I didn't care what the subject was today. I just want to stay connected to this community. I've been to one integral living room, and I, because I live so far away, I miss most of them. But I love being on these calls, and that's why I'm here. I don't care the subject. I do care who's here talking about it.
Oh, well, thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Christine.
Thank you, Christine. Thanks for coming to the event.
Yeah. Let's hear from some more people. Wow, a lot of hands are up. Okay. Here we are. Di Shearer, welcome.
Hello, I'm here in South Australia. I'm glad to be back to the Integral Living Room, and I've been to a few and then had a break, but I'm here today remembering now that the subject was death. My brother passed away at 77 years of age in March, was found dead in his unit, and we still don't know whether he assisted in that death himself. He had a couple of attempts 7 years ago, so we're waiting on the coroner's report in that regard, but I'm glad to be back in the company as well. I'm glad to hear a Queenslander online.
Okay. Thank you, Di. Good to hear your voice. Jeremy, welcome.
Hey, hi. Yeah, well, so I about died myself. So it was, was diagnosed with cancer and you know, 50% chance of dying. And so going through that process, I learned to face that. And it transformed my life, you know, for the better. You know, it was, instead of just kind of going along the path of life, I turned around and said, you know, this is it. The face death is the face life. And that's what I got to say. It's a real blessing.
Well, thank you, Jeremy.
Yeah, really. Well, let's take maybe one more, Di. At least I'm thinking we have time for just one more. Koshin, you raised your hand. Welcome.
Welcome. My name is Koshin. Concerning death, it happened to me that I was in a state of grace, and I understood everything in the state of grace, where I was, what my life meant, what life is about, and I was waiting to die, and it was perfect. I had the willingness and the openness to die. Perhaps not me, but my soul did, and I didn't, die, and I was still in the world, and I had to ask myself the question, what did I need to live further? And it was to go back into the world with this idea that it could end at any time. And that's what I've been living. And I think it is a state of grace to accept the fact that all of the experiencing can disappear at any moment. And my life has been so rich since. Thank you.
Right on. Wow.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't know about these people.
Well,
I feel like I'm the student here, I'll tell you. Yeah.
Well, this process of being with our losses and also awakening to that which can never be lost and be, you know, truly non-dual is to be with both of those realities, to be that which is not only going to die, but which is always dying, and yet also to be that which can never die, and to deepen into both, and to be tenderized and drawn into resonance and empathy with the totality of human experience. It's just very moving.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah. I think that that may be...
I appreciate it.
Oh, go ahead, Di. You were going to say.
I was just going to say, I just really appreciate being in the company of people that can hold. This is why I love the Integral Living Room so much, is the just holding these different dimensions of our experience and being able to affirm all of them, that there's, you know, that there's the pain and the loss and the, you know, the sort of impossibility of it, and at the same time, the connection to the preciousness that comes precisely because it's impermanent. In Jack Kerouac's words, he says, how strange, how worthy, how good for us. And to be with people that can kind of inhabit all of those dimensions is really meaningful.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have a sense that the living room this year might turn into a very, very poignant and tender and deeply intimate affair because of the way that this contact with loss humanizes us and softens us. Yeah. Well, we're at that point in the call where maybe it's time for us to hear from our pandit, Ken Wilber. We had a very rich conversation with Ken, and we have an audio of Ken talking both about the transcendental and the imminent sides of this paradox. So, Brad, if you'd be so kind to start it, that'd be terrific.
It's identity that we're looking at here whenever we're talking about death. And since the growth process is a process of expanding identity, the growth process is also a process of death and rebirth, death and rebirth, death and rebirth, until our identity is with the all, until we have the supreme identity, one with absolutely the entire manifest and unmanifest universe. And at that point, we're unborn and undying. And or you can look at it paradoxically and say we're born in everything that we manifest as, and we die with everything that we manifest as. But as a totality, it's all together, unborn and undying. And that's, of course, the way the ultimate is always described, and that's the meaning of timelessness or eternity. So our relationship to death is a little bit odd. And we have it because most of the experiences, or many of the experiences of death, are forced on us. That we don't do them intentionally. We don't want them to happen because we're still identified with that thing that is loss, with death. And so we experience it very, very painfully. And that's an intrinsic part of the pain of dukkha. That's an intrinsic part of samsara. And so as Ernst Becker used to say in his books, the great repression in civilization is not of sex, it's of death. And Otto Rank used to talk of immortality projects that men and women try to overcome death, to deny death, by creating artifacts that will live forever. And the only one that saw through that was Woody Allen. He said, no, I don't want to achieve immortality through my art. I'm going to achieve immortality by never dying. So he sort of nailed that one. But that's our approach.
That's hilarious.
It is. I mean, it's really funny. It's really funny. But our approach to death, we've sort of got it backwards in that sense, because to say that we are really denying death is to say that we're in a developmental arrest. Because if we refuse death, then that means we won't be able to let go of the lower. We won't be able to die to the lower. And so we won't be able to be reborn on the higher. And so the denial of death is the denial of life. It's the denial of growth. And it's this dialectical unity of life and death. It's always so sort of paradoxical. But it also explains the fact that people that have a great fear of death have an equally great fear of life. They have to be really careful when they're living because something could happen and would kill them. And so the more afraid they are of dying, the more afraid they are of living. The bus could run over them. They could fall off a cliff, something terrible. And so they're oddly interwoven. But by us sort of splitting them apart and then denying one, we end up denying the other. And we end up freezing our identity at that level that it's at when we get involved in any death denial. And so we can't do the process of growth, which is the process of death and rebirth. We can't do the process of development, which is the process of dying and being reborn on a higher identity. And we can't do that because we can't die to the lower identity. And if we do, it experiences enormous grief and enormous loss, and it can completely undo people. It can completely just devastate them and throw their entire system out of whack for months or years or sometimes for the rest of their actual life. So that's kind of an overview of how I see the whole this whole issue interwoven with ongoing reality itself and with our own ongoing growth and development, and with what's required for growth and development, and how death is an actual part of that, and letting go is an actual part of that. You can find many Zen stories, for example, of people talking about being afraid of letting go into emptiness because it would be like dying. And that's exactly right. But they discover that once they actually die to that lesser identity and find their supreme identity, identity with the all, then death loses its meaning at that point. Because all deaths have been died. And so it's simply, you're no longer limited to the realm in which death has an apparently real and separate meaning. And you're released back into the all ground of the great perfection, unborn and dying, endlessly. And then that is simply the ongoing thusness of what our own natures are, everlastingly. And we've been able to see that to the extent any of us have, to the degree that we've died to those lesser identities that didn't see it. And it involved those kinds of death. And so sometimes people will actually experience it as a death. Some will simply experience, in particularly, the rebirth. Some will experience the infusion of greater life and love and superabundance and awareness and love. Other people will have a more distinctly conscious sense of, God, I don't even know who that was. I don't know who I was back then. It wasn't me. That wasn't the real me. This is the real me. And that old me is just dead. I don't know where it went, but it's gone. And the great liberation is the great death. And these are such themes so common throughout the great spiritual traditions that they just have become almost cliches for people in the spiritual field. But when you look at it, you see that it's actually, they're fundamental textures of the real universe since the Big Bang. And they're part of things that were built in to the universe because it was the only way to build a universe. The only way to have whole lawns fit together was to have space and time and directionality and life and death and lifespan and so on. And there wasn't any other way that you could actually get a gazillion particles all interacting together and actually moving and doing something. And so
it's amazing.
It is. And it, sooner or later, it sprouted us. And us sprouted all these thoughts about it. And just, that's, the universe is winding up. It's definitely winding up. So what we're saying is, there's also a truth about this that's going on at every stage of growth, which is a process of transcend and include. It means moving to higher and higher and wider and deeper identities. It is a continual process of being identified with something, interiorly or exteriorly, and then letting go of that identity, dying to it, and experiencing a higher identity, a wider identity, an identity with more perspectives or greater territory or larger values or more inclusive capacities. And so to practice taking up a friendliness to loss and grief and death, and not to see them simply as a signal that something has gone wrong, but as a signal that something is in a process of getting better. And so it's like having a Geiger counter, and you're out looking for uranium metals, and the Geiger counter starts going off, and you go, oh no, and you turn around and run. But that's our attitude towards grief and loss and death. And it's the wrong attitude. And so simply taking up a practice where you allow the grief and the loss in, and when you allow that death in, when you breathe it in and circulate it in your body and put it right in the middle of your heart and embrace it is a way to digest those extremely painful processes. But that pain is coming from our limited identity. It's not coming from the actual loss of whatever the thing is. It's our being identified with it that causes us pain. When somebody in West Virginia, when a hillbilly in West Virginia hears that somebody in Pakistan died, they don't feel any pain at all. They couldn't care less. Either egocentric or ethnocentric at most. But when somebody's world-centric or cosmocentric and they hear about somebody else's death, they feel a pain because they're identified with that larger whole. That's the process that we're looking at. So anytime we run into death, anytime we run into grief and loss, underneath that is an identity. We were identified interiorly or exteriorly, I, me, or mine, with this entity that was lost. And therefore, we experience that as a death, and that is a sort of ultimate pain. And so there's a way to grow through the investigation and the welcoming of, okay, where is my hidden identity in this? Where is my hidden sort of Buddhist way to put all this? Is where's my attachment in all this? It's not the thing that's happening that's causing the problem. It's my attachment to the thing that's happening that's causing the problem. And so I had, to the extent that I got through the deaths that I got through with Treya and with my own physical body, there was enormous growth on the other side. And so, and I can also still feel a sentimental loss for all of those. But I got through them and I saw a light on the other, at the end of that tunnel, by letting go of a certain identity that had been created around those entities. And I got an enormous head start on that with Treya, because the night that she died, I sat up reading her favorite spiritual passages, particular ones about death, from Ramana Maharshi and Krishnamurti and the Tibetan Book of the Dead and so on. And I went through all of the instructions in the Tibetan Book of the Dead several times. At about 2 o'clock in that morning, I wrote about this in Grace and Crib, but around 2 o'clock I heard this just unbelievably loud click, like something snapping or breaking. And I got this immediate image of her just breaking the cord that kept her attached to samsara. So it was literally an umbilical cord, but it was snapping and she was now completely free. And I was absolutely ushered into that same space. And I'd experienced that before. I'd been practicing for many years by then. But this was a really, really profound experience of that. And Trey and I were essentially one at that point. I mean, and that meant I had accepted her separate self being gone, because in that oneness, it was gone. The death had happened. It was over. And we were both at this higher life, this super abundant, radiant, loving life. And I stayed in that state for 24 hours a day for several weeks. And that did enormous amount of moving me through that grief process. And then I had about probably 3 or 4 months where, about 3 months, once a day, at almost the same time every day, it was like 10 or 11 in the morning, I would just sit on the end of a sofa and start crying. And I spent 20 minutes. And I found out a lot of what I was doing was the 5 years we were together, when we got so much bad news after bad news after bad news. And I had to sort of, you know, be the strong one and take care of her. And so I didn't have a chance to really experience the losses that we were constantly going through. And so I couldn't really die to them. And so I couldn't really grow through them either. And when I went through this crying period, it was almost a strict chronological sequence. So that I simply went back through that 5 years, and my mind would just go from one point where I had to suppress grief or fear, and it would re-experience that moment briefly and digest it, and then it would move on to the next until I'd gone through 5 years of grief. And so it was a combination of those two that allowed me to experience those losses and therefore accept the death of those losses and therefore grow literally quick and quite rapidly move through them. So it was being able to accept those deaths. And not only at that sort of ultimate superabundance level, but at the smallest, most everyday picayune moments of going to the doctor or having another surgery or doing another round of chemotherapy or just hundreds of insults that I couldn't experience directly because I wouldn't allow myself to suffer their death. So I think this is, it has a lot to do with ordinary life as well, and just the way that you can approach loss and grief and the whole connection that you have between death and your identity. But one thing is for sure, is when we stop accepting death, when we get into a death denial or an immortality project or spiritual bypassing or any of that, then we can't die to whatever level we're on, and therefore we can't grow to the next higher level. It's a developmental arrest. Death denial is a denial of development. It's a denial of growth. And people are dealing with that every day, every minute of every day.
Diane, do you want to respond to all that Ken shared?
Yeah, I do. The first thing, of course, is just that anybody who knows Ken or knows his work knows that the loss of his wife, of Treya, is probably the single most significant event in his life. And to hear him talk specifically about being in a kind of transcendent state, or a state that's kind of beyond identity, in some ways beyond the loss, and then to have to go through the very particulars of the experience that he went through over those 5 years and to grieve those each, I was really moved by that. I also was really struck by his confidence that the universe is winding up. You know, the way he said that, he kind of invited us to see that in order for there to be a universe and for things to grow and to change, then death has to be implicit in that, and that all the deaths that we've experienced are part of our unfolding and part of our growth, and that the universe is well on its way to it sounded like higher orders of complexity and possibly consciousness. And I kind of got a rush out of just, I enjoy Ken when he says those things with that kind of confidence. And as usual, just a deep appreciation for his way of looking at the world and his way of framing it and talking about how, you know, becoming intimate with death is to become intimate with our life. And also with this, because we put so much emphasis on evolution and on development, to realize that the process of growth always increases, and that we tend to, in our conversations about human development, we tend to emphasize the expansiveness and the new perspectives and the more freedom and inclusion, easier ways of being. But we sort of fail to acknowledge the grief that's included all along the way, even to the extent of, you know, outgrowing an old way of seeing the world, or outgrowing a people, or outgrowing a particular profession because we can no longer relate to it. So I really appreciate the positioning of death in relationship to growth as well. So all those were really. How about you, Jeff? What did you take?
Yeah. Well, boy, I could really just second everything you said, Di. I mean, for me, listening to Ken there. It's funny because I was on that call, and it was like I was hearing it for the first time here just now, again. And just for me, just kind of a personal, kind of a personal thing is, what a great teacher Ken is to me. You know, what a transmission that I receive from him just listening to him. It's always been true. It was true when I was reading him before I ever heard his voice for years. And I just note that, you know, finding one's teacher is a cool thing, and Ken's mine. And so I sit here actually feeling bigger and more wholehearted and optimistic. And what you said, Di, about the winding up, you know, that, and to be part of that, so that death isn't the end. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, there's more. And I don't know, you know, it's mysterious as to how that all works, but I'm sitting here right now in some faith around that. And that feels really great. Yeah, so, you know, it's good. I can't wait to die all of a sudden. you know, how cool is that?
Wait a little.
Well, I don't know. Thank God. I believe me, I offer myself here as a novice student, really. I mean, I haven't had a lot, as I said, a lot of experience with this, but it's really been an exciting exploration just even in these last few months. So, Terry, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I'm particularly resonating with that third point that you expressed, Di, from what Ken had to say about how growth always involves letting go and losing something, and that there's a constant loss. That it reminds me of that wonderful poem by Hermann Hesse. He says, say goodbye without ceasing, you know. All our growth to higher stages involves letting go of some. It's farewell, farewell, farewell without ceasing. It's the only poem he ever wrote. It's part of the Glass Bead Game. And it expresses exactly that point, which you know, I think that as we grow, we lose more people. I was reflecting these two deaths were people I had been close to with Leslie, who I had been married to in the 70s, 80s, and quite a few years. And we had to spend some time together to kind of collectively remember and appreciate these two deaths happening so recently. It brought us together in realizing that we'd shared these friendships with these people, and that many other people who we had been close to during those years have also died, and realizing, gosh, you know, at this stage of our lives, a lot of people we know have already passed on. And there's a quality that often steals into people's lives as they get into their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s of sadness because they become lonely. Their population of close friends disappears. And although we can certainly make new friends, we don't have to have our world shrink altogether. We can't make new old friends, and we have fewer of those old friends, although the old friend who survived certainly known for an even longer time. There's something of the letting go, the ecstasy of surrender, the freedom of being fully in the letting go that is coming forward for me as I feel into that lesson. Very touching. Ah, so thank you. Well, we wanted to hear from all of you guys, so please raise your hand if you'd like to make a contribution to this conversation and dive in. Please press 1. If you pressed 1 before and you didn't get called on, feel free to raise your hand again so we catch you this time around. Nina, hi.
Answering the question that I had, which was, am I in denial or am I just really okay with this death thing? And after hearing everything, it's like, oh, I'm not in denial. I really do get it. And what a relief, because my parents are 90 and I love them very much. So it's like really a relief to know I'm going to be able to handle it. And that I'll be sad and all that, but that it's not going to be some kind of crushing experience because I was in denial all this time.
Mm.
So thank you. It's wonderful.
Can I ask how you came to that conclusion in the conversation here?
I decided just listening to the experiences because they matched how my feeling has always been that there is, you know, that we don't really ever really die. I mean, our bodies die, obviously. And I had a death of someone I cared deeply about when I was a teenager, and then someone else that I care, like a second mother to me, my very close aunt in my 20s. So I had experienced death, and I thought, well, okay, was I just in denial all this time, or was I really this okay? It wasn't that I wasn't sad and didn't cry, but I wasn't wrecked. I wasn't destroyed by it. And I thought, I've never been afraid of it since then. I'm certainly not afraid to die myself. I'm not looking to, but I'm certainly not afraid. It's like, what an adventure. Like, wow, this is going to be so cool. I hope I'm awake for it. To which someone replied, I think you're going to know when it happens. I was like, oh, yeah, right, okay. I was like, oh, I hope I don't die in my sleep because I don't want to miss it. It was a stupid thing to say. But I mean, that was kind of what, you know, and they said, no, I don't think you're going to miss it. I'm like, oh, right, you're right. Yeah, no, I'm not. You're right. I'm not going to miss it. But now I feel like after hearing what you've all said, I have come to, it's like, okay, now I feel secure in that, no, I'm not in denial. I haven't been pretending and avoiding. I really am going to be okay with this when my parents go. I'm going to be able to be with them, be present with, celebrate it with them. And yes, I'm going to be sad. I'm going to miss them, but I'm going to be able to handle the way I would like to be.
It occurs to me to suggest that I love that and I want to affirm that. And yet it feels important to maybe remind you that, and you will learn something from it. That whatever it is that's affirmed is still not necessarily final. There's always something more being taught. Oh. And these are such deep principles that it's like the spiral always turns and deepens, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, and that's the thing is when they go, I'm going to feel it and I'm going to know it and I am going to learn it. And you're absolutely dead on that, pun not intended, but they're the same, that I am going to continually. At my age, I'm starting, you know, all of my best friends' mothers have passed now. So mine is the last one, and I've gone through that with them. And each one was a learning. And I can see where when it's my own, it's going to be a way bigger one, way bigger learning. So
I
agree with that.
Thank you so much, Nina. That's great. I want to get to some of the other folks, too. Really appreciate your contribution. Let's see. Doris, thank you for raising your hand. Hi, Doris. Welcome.
Sure. Hi. So I am in the midst of experiencing a death of a part of me, and it's been something that has utterly knocked me on my butt. It has to do with my livelihood suddenly falling off and my identity being seriously shaken, and I'm terrified about livelihood and money and that kind of. And I am utterly amazed at it and also extremely troubled. It's very disturbing. And I was really realizing today, I just got this image as I was, I mean, I'm still going to the office and trying to cultivate work, but my work has dropped off dramatically for no apparent reason whatsoever. It's such a mystery and it's so fascinating, but it's also so terrifying, and I am really experiencing my ego just crumbling, and in some ways it can't crumble fast enough because, of course, it's so terrifying and so big and also so precious and rich that I'm stunned, and I am living every day. I'm not sleeping very much, but I am staying. I'm hanging in there, and there are times I just go into a vortex of. I had asked for, my New Year's resolution was, I want to be honest, and I do not want to lie to myself anymore. I don't want to engage in illusion, and I feel like I ask for this, and I am getting it in spades. I never realized it would come in this form, of course. but it is, I mean, I feel like I'm on a bad acid trip, and I'm really, I'm amazed. It's really hard, and it's also so fertile.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I am.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm feeling that one.
Yeah
me too.
Thanks.
Do you mind my asking, what do you do?
I'm a divorce lawyer. I mean, and I do collaborative law, divorce, and I do mediation. I actually reviewed your book, Diana, a couple of years ago.
Thank you.
I think it's posted on my blog, but I've done other things, like I've represented a Guantanamo prisoner, but it feels like, and I hate to even speak this word, it feels like my practice is drying up. And so that's what I'm dealing with. And it's certainly like there's nothing external that I can point to or am aware of or that anybody, it is just this unbelievable. And there is such synchronicity at times in what I'm discovering. Yet I would not wish this on anybody. And of course, people, there are many, many worse things. I'm not living in Syria. I'm not saying, but it's still horrible for me. And it's so powerful. I am going to stay present in it. I absolutely will. But there are times when I feel like I'm going to lose my mind. You know, I'm really scared. I needed to work for 5 more years in order to fund my retirement. And anyway, I can go into that. You know how that is.
Yeah.
It's wonderful too.
Yeah,
it is absolutely.
Yeah, I was
going to
say I find myself inspired, you know, by your story.
Yeah.
Sorry, and you know, sympathetic for sure, but also inspired. So, you know, God bless you, Doris.
Thank you. I really appreciate.
Thank you, Doris. I'm feeling you quite a lot. I'm glad Beth and I have had to share that. Well, let's hear from Tom. In South Carolina. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Terry. Good to hear your voice. I was really touched by. Oh goodness, I've lived in those currently in those weeks that were 2 years ago, and wow, what an experience! And I feel blessed by knowing you and all of your gifts that you offered. I've been thinking about what I received from what Ken said, and I'm looking right at 82 years of age, and feel really fortunate to be living yet and have hopefully many more years left. But as I gain a few more years, I really am more trustworthy, more trustful of really not knowing. There's a boundary out there. One day I will not be able to take in oxygen that I will die. And I'm okay with letting that be, what's beyond that be a mystery, and gives me power, gives me a sense of rest, but it also gives me passion to know that this is such a mysterious pilgrimage, this thing called life, and not trying to resist it, which at times in my life I've resisted grief and loss and become frightened, and those times are not very heavy anymore, and so the trust of not knowing is a gift that's somewhere in that life that's offered. And I think what Ken said about non-duality and that we're in loss and growth, so unified whole means a lot to me. And another thing is not only the boundary and the mystery that comes with that, but I think in a way, we write our own story. Certainly, there are inspiring moments that give us life and energy. But so that somehow moving towards that boundary that no longer will I have oxygen, perhaps. But that a lot is left up to me as to how I want to write that story and the choices and struggles and how I deal with anxiety. What do I want to include in that story so that when whatever that last moments might be, to be able to offer that story up to the mystery of creation and the connection to all that is my story related to the everlasting story that's moving on in the universe. And those are things that the most to me out of this experience of being in this living room tonight. Thank you so much for offering this program. I'm really touched.
No, thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Yeah. So it's down here in the South, we have a lot of struggles dealing with dogma and this sort of thing. And at one time, I would have been rather frightened of being kind of on the cutting edge of social protest, that sort of thing. But it just means so much to me to know that there's yet so much out there that's a part of living and protesting all the prejudice that the Southern culture, even to the extent of being arrested here and there. So I'm glad to be able to continue my story tonight. That's
yeah.
for sure.
Still kicking.
Still kicking. That's right.
All right. Right on, yeah. man. Thanks for getting on right the line for us.
Long may you wave.
Exactly. Okay. Boy, there are quite a few hands up. Let's see. Lots of people I would like to call on. Maybe we could at least quickly hear from a couple more people. Sharona, I know you had your hand up before, too. Welcome.
Yeah, hi, everybody. Boy, I've got all sorts of directions that this could go. But so the first thing I wanted to say was about grief itself. And I know in my experience, I've experienced death on many levels and many different people and death of, different parts of myself and, on and on and on. And what I found is when I go into grief, I go into a great pool of grief that is far beyond anyone. And so there's a sense in my experience that, grief abides. That it maybe an experience is a doorway into this particular space, but it's always there, and the capacity to be with it and learn from it and process it and swim in it increases over time and, visiting that territory over and again. And, and another thing about death itself is it occurs to me that the experience is very different depending on, kind of the generation. It's like, yes, we're sad when our parents die, and that happens in good order. I think I'm going to be a little more distraught when one of my siblings dies, and I can't even imagine how I would handle a child die. Blows my mind. A dear friend of mine recently had an experience where her 9-year-old niece died very suddenly. It was one of these things where she was sick one day, went to the hospital, and was dead the next day. And there was no clear reason why. And when we were talking about it, she's a nurse and she could have gone through the autopsy, but we just sort of had to go to a transcendent level, what's happening spiritually here. And we both kind of worked through this and came to this idea, this thought that said, nobody dies before their time. And I found so much comfort in that thought, that nobody dies before their time. Their time happens when their time happens.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to put that into the mix here.
Yeah, I feel a little bit like with that, like what Tom said a minute ago about just the mystery of it and sort of just trusting the system. And what you say, Sharona, about people die in their time, that there is a comfort in that, and that I can't figure it out. It's beyond me, but I do trust it. And that's good. That feels like progress to me.
Just your trust of the unknowable mystery.
Trust in the system. Everybody who's walked the face of this earth, all the people you read about in history, the Lincoln, the Caesar, they all did this one thing. They died. And, I always think of Ram Dass's great line, don't worry about death, is perfectly safe. And that's, don't worry about death, it's perfectly safe. It's sort of where I end up with
that. I do think that Sharona's point about grief kind of being a doorway into greater grief
you know, we talked, the three of us, a little bit about, you know, what it means to, you know, we work with these lines of intelligence, and we talk about emotional intelligence, to develop emotionally, and really learning how to include grief on an embodied level and give yourself over to it is a bit of a, you know, it is a practice. And I think Sharona's point about sometimes people, there's a fear that comes up because when that sensation that the grief of one experience is opening to the grief of all of your losses, that can be really, really overwhelming. And that experience, you know, grief is such a watery experience anyway, that there's a sensation that you could possibly drown. And so learning how to trust that too, Jeff, you know, trusting that embodied ability we have to grieve is really, really also part of the trust I think we have to cultivate.
Beautiful. Well, we're just about here at the end of our time. Maybe we could take one more question, do you guys think?
Yeah,
maybe at least a short one. Yeah. I see that Lore here, that's the name I see. Hi, Lore. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Well, I just want to relate to an experience that we all probably had in the 60s, going to Sam Burkholz's Shambhala bookstore and picking up a copy of the Tibetan Wen's Tibetan Book of the Dead, and what an impact that had on us and the entire culture, because it was later picked up with Tim Leary and Ram Dass, who made the psychedelic journey into that book. So it's like we've been, unlike my parents' generation, and now I'm a geezer, unlike our parents' generation, death suddenly came out as some kind of a hero to look at, some kind of a magical experience. So we took our acid or DMT or peyote and read from the chapters of the Tibetan Book of the Dead or the psychedelic version, and it all seemed very magical. And I think that this was a big shift in our consciousness, because it moved me into Buddhism, and a lot of people, changed our whole perception of life and what was really supposed to happen. And I'm so glad that you all are now looking into this. And thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Lore. All right. Well, then maybe we'll just bring this to a close. Terry, Di, anything else you want to say to wrap it up?
I just want to say that that line about we took our acid and our DMT was hilarious.
I didn't take DMT. I just want to put that on the table. I do not recall what I may have taken, but I didn't take that, to my knowledge.
At least knowingly.
At least knowingly, yes, maybe.
Well,
go ahead, Di.
I'll finish quickly, Terry. Just the part of the psychedelic experience is that facing something that feels always like death or just, and you know, that's why we always quiver. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, and also being delivered into a transpersonal space, you know, being delivered into a space that's bigger than one's small identity is, you know, you don't snap all the way back when the drug trip's over. There's a little residual, and I do think that that's been very powerful. Psychedelics have been very powerful in my my spiritual growth. Not that I did a whole lot, but you don't have to. You can't unsee that unity, you know, and some of the things you see. So, anyway.
Yeah,
you know, pot's legal here in Boulder, folks. So, you know, if you come out to the Integral Living Room, it's all perfectly legal to do at least the marijuana thing. So thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. And if you're interested in joining us at the Integral Living Room in November, it's the November 10th through 13th here in Boulder at the Integral Center. I know a lot of you on this call have been with us before, and you can check it out at integrallivingroom.com, and we'd really love to have you with us. We will be having two more calls. I wish I knew the date of the next one. I don't off the top of my head here. Did Terry die to you? But we'll let you know. It's coming up in another couple months. And I guess that's it. Anything else, Di, Terry?
Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, just a
The next
warm and
Integral Living Room
grateful
community
goodbye.
Call is July 21st. July 21st.
July 24th?
Is the next
one.
Yeah.
Oh, what fun.
Thank you so much.
I feel so warm and full and inspired, and I'm really, really so grateful, as a couple people mentioned, to have this community really all over the world. It was so great hearing from the ladies from Australia. And thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight.
Yeah. Oh, one last
thank
thing,
you, everyone.
Everybody. We are we're getting very close to selling out. So if you're serious about joining us, it's probably a wise thing to register without delay.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.